I'm Mike Vardy, and this is the Productivityist Podcast. Welcome to the Productivityist Podcast. I am your host, Mike Vardy, and this week on the show, I have Avram Nadigal joining me. And Avram is he's an author. He's a relationship therapist. He co-produces a podcast called It's the Anxiety Stupid, and this podcast is about relationship angst. And he also draws a comic about intimacy called Ball and Change. He's a songwriter and musician. He's co-composed the soundtrack for Exiles from Lotus Land. It's an award-winning NFB documentary. This is something I did not know when I arranged to chat with him, because initially we just chatted online via social media about the things we admired and enjoyed and didn't like so much about productivity. We get into that. We get into the GTD, which you, if you've been following me for any length of time, know I've left behind. We talk about Covey's stuff. We talk about his biggest fear, which, you know, kind of mirrors mine to a certain extent. And then his pet peeve. We dive into that. And he's got a new book coming out, which we'll get to during this discussion. But his new book is calling Learning to Commit, the workbook, Becoming Your Best Self to Find Your Best Match. And it'll be coming out by Self Counsel Press in the tentative date is November. Let's just get into this conversation, because I had a great time chatting with Avram, and I'm sure that you will enjoy it as well. Here's my conversation with Avram Nadigal on the Productivityist Podcast. I'd like to welcome Avram Nadigal to the Productivityist Podcast. Avram, thanks for joining me today.
It's great to be here, Mike.
We just spent like the last 50 minutes or so, 40 minutes, just chatting and getting to know each other a bit more, because we've spoken, I put air quotes around that, via the various social media stuff, as well as, you know, via email and then an anchor, which I've really not used all that much lately. You know, it's great to have somebody else that's into productivity that's a Canadian. I'm finding more and more of them out there, and I'm glad that you're able to take some time to be on the show with me today.
Yeah, it's funny, actually. I'll name drop here. I actually jammed an old friend of mine, Mitch Joel, who sort of, I'm sure,
yep,
you know.
I know Mitch, yeah.
We work together and stuff. So he's the only other guy I know, I think, in Canada he's at least productive. I'll say that.
Yeah. Mitch was just here in Victoria not too long ago, speaking at Social Media Camp. He was in and out. He was very quick. I mean, like most speakers, when they come into a city, they have to come in and do their thing and then leave. But, I guess that's efficiency personified. So I want to talk to you today about, the idea of productivity. And one of the things that you and I've, chatted about, and I've written about, which I'll put in the show notes, is the idea of why I've left GTD behind. And my obvious reasons were listed there, but also I've got my own methodology that I teach now. But you and I've chatted about this, and you've kind of shifted away from the David Allen Getting Things Done methodology as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I have.
So what propelled you to move away from that, and where are you headed now in terms of what methodology that you use?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's interesting. I first was introduced to productivity via a lawyer in Vancouver who suggested Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, which I just loved. I mean, we'll come back to this, I'm sure, as we speak, but I love the book. And I had what is it called? Plan Plus for Outlook, mm-hmm. The Covey system, which back in you know, the early 2000s was an amazing piece of software. But they notoriously, the Franklin Covey people, dropped the ball on that in such a spectacular way that you start wondering, how can they preach effectiveness and really drop the ball? So I lost faith in the company. And then when the Eighth Habit came out, when Stephen Covey wrote the Eighth Habit, I thought it was just a letdown from the 7 Habits. I started looking elsewhere, and that's when I first heard about David Allen's Getting Things Done. And I'll say this about David Allen, because I think it has to be said. At least I'll say this. The man, he's, you know, he speaks, it's almost like verbal heroin. I mean, I find his words are so well chosen, and everything is is tweetable and everything is quotable and he's bright and he's such a pleasure to listen to, and it's seductive, and I really thought that, I mean, you know, and he answers all your questions and all the minutiae of your life. Everything sounds like, you know, you will be that calm lake that he refers to. What I found started happening though as I became involved with the program, and this could be a fault of my own, my personality, it might be the minions, the GTD fans, and I found what ended up happening was that you drop one ball somewhere in the system, mm-hmm. and then you don't trust the system, which he talks about, by the way. David Allen owns that part.
Yes.
And then I started noticing I was getting anxious. I was getting anxious about my system, and then I was getting anxious about the anxiety, and it wasn't doing what I thought it would do. So then I sort of took a step back, and I started questioning, well, maybe this stuff – maybe some of the things he's saying actually isn't valid, isn't true. And whenever I tried to discuss it with people on the GTD forums, there was so much resistance to talking about to express any criticism about the system, that I just started naturally looking elsewhere, holding on to little bits of what David Allen, you know, would suggest. And now I'm at a point where the only thing I really do from getting things done is having a next action or a breadcrumb for every project that I have. But I will say this though about David Allen: whenever he's interviewed, if I ever have time, I will listen to him because I really enjoy listening to him speak. Whether it's with you or someone else, I enjoy listening to him when he's in his sort of philosophical, almost spiritual way of speaking. I enjoy his ideas.
Have you read the new version of Getting Things Done? The one that came out earlier? Well, I guess it'd be late last year now, 2015.
Look. Mike, I'll tell you, when I heard him speaking about it and he said he changed so little and, you know, he went back to the, you know, David himself, by the way, just like Covey, mm-hmm. just like Barbara Scher, any of the productivity gurus out there, I find they all get very defensive when criticism or feedback is suggested. So, for example, whenever I've heard David Allen speak and someone asks him about context and they suggest, well, you know, maybe, I always find his reaction to the criticism to be, I'm trying to think, I find that he brushes people off a little bit too quickly. I think perhaps Merlin Mann is being kind when recently Merlin Mann has said he stopped using GTD. I think that GTD sounded, I'd imagine if you were a cubicle guy or gal back in, you know, the late 90s or early 2000s, this was sort of perhaps a life-saving methodology for you. Mm-hmm. I just find so many of the suggestions, they just don't fit for my workflow. And when I heard him saying that he really didn't do very much for the new version, that there was just a little bit of tweaks because he claims that it's evergreen. I was like, I had better things to do with my time.
Yeah. And I think that he did make some, I think he was probably being a little bit, undervaluing. He undervalued a little bit of what he's done in there, because what I think he's done is made it more accessible to people. Mm. I think it was very much, you know, a methodology that seemed rooted, as we've talked about, or I've talked to him about before. It's been very rooted it's been very rooted in corporations and corporate stuff, you know, like you mm-hmm. said, the cubicle stuff. So for me, I think that was part of it, is to, you know, kind of see what you can do and what he's done to kind of shift it so that it's more accessible to pretty much anybody, because he's changed some of the verbiage and some of the, but one of the things he did do, and you said about being evergreen, is he removed the, you know, he wants to make sure that the term smartphone, for example, Eric Fisher talked to him about this, is that's there because it's a part of, undeniably a part of society and what's going to happen going forward. Right. Now, so you've moved to, have you moved exclusively? Because you and I have chatted about this. Have you moved exclusively to Covey, or have you kind of cobbled, like what most of us do? Most people have done is say, okay, what's worked in GTD? Like you said, the next action list. Let me take that and combine that with some of the other elements from, let's say, Covey, and some from Agile, and some from, like, have you done that, or are you largely shifted over to say more of the Covey style.
No, it's impossible. It's just impossible. I think when Stephen Covey died and it was about a year or two before he passed away, he created something called the Covey Community, which it had potential. I think he was mm-hmm. trying to do something online. It had potential. I was a member. But it just, it was never nurtured in the way I think it would have been if this was 1976 or something, or
right.
When Covey first started doing this work. And when he died, it all sort of just it fizzled, and I think his sons are busy doing the Seven Habits of Highly Effective Teen stuff in high mm-hmm. schools and elementary. So so basically, here I'll give you the gestalt of it all, and I'll reference the name in the system of what I'm borrowing. Right now, I'm using Daylight by Market Circle for Mac.
Based where you are in Toronto.
They're in Mississauga, I think. Yeah, wonderful company. Unfortunately, I find the software to be it's a behemoth. I mean, it's it's just huge, and I don't use 97% of it, I think it just tries to do too many things. But they have this thing called DMI, which is a plugin for Mac Mail, which is just amazing. So right within, have you used DMI for mail?
I've not.
Okay. So imagine you send me an email saying, "Hey, Avram, you want to be on my podcast?" Right within Mail, a little sidebar pops open. I can create a project right within Mail. I can create a task that gets assigned to that project right within Mail. It tags Mike Vardy as part. And every time you and I email, all that correspondence, any tasks I make right within Mail, all goes into Daylight, into the database. And I never have to open up, for example, you would with OmniFocus or things. I never have to touch the mothership. I can stay right within Mail and create projects and tasks and opportunities and notes. It's unbelievable. That alone is worth the price of this. So I'm using, that's where my whole system, and I'm a therapist in private practice and an author and a musician. So I do a lot of things. So I keep everything within Daylight. The methodologies I borrow from Barbara Shore, who wrote a book called Wishcraft in the mid-70s, which is still perhaps my favorite self-help book, productivity self-help book. She has two ideas that I use. She talks about emotional touchstones. So anything, any goal that you have in your life should have an emotional touchstone, as embarrassing as it may seem. So I'd imagine that, Tim Ferriss might not admit this, but I'd imagine that a little bit of his narcissistic stuff that he's got going within him, which he might not say out loud, clearly that's an emotional touchstone for him. He gets fueled up, I think, mm-hmm. when he's the focal point of things. So she would say, very important not to, you don't have to go for therapy for that. You have to just recognize it and make sure that every one of your goals has an emotional touchstone associated with it. Because she goes, without that, things will fizzle out. And I thought that was a very smart psychological idea. So whenever I create a new project, I think about what touchstone, what emotion, what's the juice behind wanting to fulfill that goal. So I put that in my little details box of a goal that I create in Daylight. And she also has this idea of isolation as a dream killer. So that for me has been huge. Always trying to find a partner to work on something with. I don't care how much money is involved with the project. If I'm working on it by myself, I'm probably going to bow out. I'm always looking for my McCartney, my Jimmy Page. I'm always looking for that person to do things with. David Allen, I'm using the Next Action stuff. From Covey, I definitely do a weekly review closer to Stephen Covey, mm-hmm. less so with getting things done. I find Covey's meaning-making stuff just much more life-affirming and interesting during my weekly review. So roles, I think about my roles, and I try to ensure that I have goals for those, and also the sharpen the saw stuff I look at as well. And the final thing I do, which is the minutia, if there's any sort of rule I follow, it's Mark Forrester's dismissal thing. So in Daylight, I have a 7-day due date attached to every single task that I create. Every task, whatever task it is, automatically a 7-day due date gets attached to it. And if I don't look at that task, so if I open up Daylight today and I have three tasks that are overdue, and this hurts, but Forrester says if you stick to this, it'll work over time. They automatically get deleted no matter how important they are. That sounds crazy and it sounds a bit insane, but if I don't touch it in 7 days, even just read it, if I don't look at it, it chances are it means that I haven't, you know, that I'm dropping the ball somewhere. It's not that important, and it just automatically gets deleted. I press delete, 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 and I take the sting up front. I learn the lesson, and I try to stay on top. Otherwise, by the way, like every other task system and piece of software, I just ignore stuff.
Yeah.
So Mark Forrester's rule really, he's evangelical about this. You know, he says you have to take dismissal seriously, whatever dismissal. You know, you got to take it seriously, and I have, and it served me well, and that's my system. That's
That's an interesting theory, because I love the idea of that, and I've taken to doing that quite a bit more, because what happens is when you're trying to focus on things like the really important stuff, the ought to do stuff, which I think is what this falls into, right? Like the stuff that, well, when you first look at it, and that's why a lot of people get stuck in the I better make a decision on this now. Do you think it's okay to let the stuff incubate? Like, do you think it's important to let this stuff incubate? Maybe not for the full 7 days, but just enough to give yourself a sense of, really, is this something that I should even attend to?
Well, I mean, it's the sort of stuff. I mean, Mark Forrester these days, I'm not following what he's doing, but he's on this, you know, bandwagon of he's sort of been talking a lot about the no-list system.
Yeah.
And trusting your intuition, and whatever is important will come up. Look, I'm a therapist. I've got, I don't know, maybe on my roster right now, I'm working with about 36 families, plus, you know, writing a book with my wife and blah, blah, blah. There's no way I can keep all the things, you know, all these balls in the air.
That's the exact opposite of what we would learn in, like, say, the getting things done idea, is to capture it. Like, if to me, that seems counterproductive to a certain extent. I think it's, but anyways, continue.
Well, I'm curious, when you say which is counterproductive?
Well, I think trying to, like, the no list system, I think to me would be counterproductive, because the fact of the matter is that when I have ideas that come to mind, I want to give my brain the bandwidth to be able to think about this stuff and not try to store all this stuff. And right. I think that's what you're saying, is that if you're trying to store all this stuff, you're not going to be able to give it the deep, like, let's use the Cal Newport deep work, the deep thought, the mindfulness that it requires to make a informed decision, as opposed to, you know, just having it all stored there. And then, you know, that's what a lot of people do now anyways. They keep stuff in their head, and then they try to make decisions on it. And the problem is that they're not, that the brain can't process things nearly as effectively when it's trying to keep track of so many things. Right. And it will try to keep track of it. David Allen's is spot on about that. It's an open loop.
Right. I do have to say that I think sometimes, you know, again, my background is in clinical work and therapy, and I'm married to a psychiatrist, so we talk a lot about these things. And if there's anything that we've learned in the area of mental health and the brain and all this kind of stuff, is that how the productivity people tend to talk about what we do as professionals, I sometimes think is a little bit of a straw man is too strong, but we don't know as much as I think people think we know.
Right.
And our friends who are neurologists say the exact same thing. So when David Allen makes a strong statement, for example, where he's been called to task, I've called him to task about Roy Baumeister's, I think, book, A Willpower, mm-hmm. that currently, by the way, is being a lot of his research is being debunked. And a lot of social psychology research has been being debunked for the past couple of years. I think we have to remain open to an idea that's been with us for thousands and thousands of years, which is what works for Mike Vardy does not work for Avram Nagel.
Yeah.
So I'll give you an example. My wife is a psychiatrist at a major hospital here in Toronto. She does not own OmniFocus. She doesn't own a list maker. She sees many, many patients. I don't think she makes a task list. She doesn't have a project list. She doesn't do a weekly review. And my wife is one of the most effective, efficient people I know, not just with our kids and at home, but as a physician. So I think we have to be clear. You know, we have to be a little bit humble here, that what I need, you know, you and I probably can chit chat about our lists for 6 hours and the time would fly by. My wife would be yawning after 2 minutes thinking, what a waste of time.
Yeah, my wife would be the same, totally.
Yeah, and by the way, and my wife, you know, is as effective, you know, I would imagine, as any of the physicians that David Allen speaks to, where they say that without GTD, their hospital or their department would fall apart. So I think we just have to, you know, we have to appreciate that the idea of know thyself is very important, and that you have to find the tool and the methodology that works for you. And I think that's something that you and I have in common, is that, you know, you and I have been around the bend with this stuff. I mean, I have tried every piece of software, not as much as you, mind you, but I've tried a lot, and I've read all but all the books. And I've had to cobble something together that works for me, because none of these things on their own really address, my needs.
I want to be respectful of your time and my listeners' time, but I definitely want to have you back on, especially when the book comes out. Now, what is the book called, and when can people expect it to be released?
So the title right now is Learning to Commit, the Workbook, Becoming Your Best Self to Find Your Best Match, and it's coming out my publisher claims, November of 2016.
Awesome. Awesome. Avram, thanks so much for joining me. All the links to what we talked about are going to be in the show notes, as well as where you can find Avram online. You're on Twitter too, right?
I am. Yeah. At Natical.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining me this week on the Productivities Podcast.
It was a pleasure, Mike. Thank you.
And there you have it. My conversation with Avram Natical. I'm looking forward to having him on the show again in the future. But in the meantime, if you want to hear more from him, of course, you can go to his comic, Ball and Change, which should be interesting to check out. Again, first comic book artist I've had on the show, first comic artist. And also check out his new book. You can pre-order it if you're listening to this before the book comes out, or just go ahead and order it. It's called Learning to Commit, the Workbook, Becoming Your Best Self to Find Your Best Match. And it's published by Self Counsel Press. I had a great time chatting with him. I'm hoping that you enjoyed it as well. If you enjoy the podcast, subscribe, share, tell your friends, review it in iTunes, rate it in iTunes, spread the word, or you can take it one step further and become a Patreon supporter. That's a patron of the Productivityist podcast. Just go to patreon.com/productivityist, choose your dollar amount. There's a perk level associated with various dollar amounts. And boom, you're going to get bonus content, a bonus episode every single week, additional content with the weekly episodes, which you would have received this time around. And actually, if you become a supporter, you can go to the backdated episodes, all the archives, and find all of those there as well. And also, you'll get regular writings from me, videos, and a whole bunch of other special stuff that you will get because you become a supporter of the show. So again, head to patreon.com/productivityist if you're interested in doing that. I'm interested in thanking podcast producer John Polster for putting this together and keeping me on track with the show. I'm interested in thanking all of you for listening this week. And that's it. Until next time, I am your host, Mike Vardy, founder of Productivityist and productivity strategist, reminding you to stop guessing and start going.